Can you hear that Rocky Mountain water as it thunders coming down to wash you away? You can't hold back the rising tide, and you can't stop the chain that's rolling down the track. You can't stop the chain that's rolling down the track.
There you go. Welcome to Southpaws, episode 392,
Crisis on Finite Patreon.
Bum bum bum.
Ah! Much more minor than us, but some people took a hell of a hit.
Yeah. So I'm Saverin.
I'm Fuzzwolf.
And I'm Shiva.
And
we're broke because all of our
food.
Well, we're broken anyways.
Yeah. We're gonna just fucking lead off with that today. So Patreon shat the bed really nice and hard. Normally we just like, yo, we got some bants and shit.
I hate that expression, and Tyrion uses it all the time.
But it's so descriptive of a terrible thing.
Yeah, it totally is.
And seriously, Tyrion hates that?
No, Tyrion uses it all the time. I don't like it. I'm just like, honey, can we have the rest of this political discussion without you using the term shit the bed?
You're breaking the rules, Fuzz.
Because everything in politics is shit in the bed. You're the one that started it.
I know. It's entirely my fault.
All this bed shitting, still not enough paper.
So, yeah, like, we're down, like, $12 an episode and, like, 4 patrons. But that's because our Patreon.com/southpodcast is actually really tiny, and that's fine. Not everybody has money to give to the show, but we appreciate the support we have. But there was at least one other show that I saw that dropped $1,200 on their monthly.
Yeah.
And that sucks. Like, last podcast probably lost a fuckload too.
And I saw like an artist where like it affected everyone in different percentages, but I saw one artist that like lost the majority of their patrons' transactions were declined. So, like, they posted a bar graph, and it was like 80% smaller.
Yeah, well, like, ours is similar like that, because I logged in and looked at it when people started going, oh, dear, and...
Yeah, I saw the email like, come through Patreon.
They successfully charged, like, normally it's a few hundred dollars on a monthly basis for us. It was, like, 90.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, oh, that's not good at all, because the amount that they actually get, the amount that it says per episode is not accurate, because people have like limits per month or whatever, so it's not always accurate. But Patreon really just boned a lot of people, and if Patreon was a primary source of income for you, you just really, got owned.
So some people were saying apparently the problem was that they moved their servers or they moved their operations to the UK, so now it shows up as a UK charge on your card if you're using a card. And a lot of banks, not all banks because it seemed to be random, some banks flagged that as potential fraud. And
yeah, like I got a warning about my Patreon charge. So, and I just said yes to the text.
I had this happen the other day.
Make sure you go back into your Patreon and hit retry, because it still won't have gone through unless you manually do that.
I will check that now.
I had that happen when I was trying to purchase the Meet the Werewolves comic number 1 off itch.io. I've purchased stuff off itch before.
Yeah.
But it declined the card and sent us a fraud warning. Like, are you really trying to purchase a $5 comic about werewolves fucking? Yes.
I'm a furry, so yes.
Well, and it's basically how the two characters in the Meet the Werewolves meet, and there is some fucking, apparently. I haven't been able to buy it because they use Stripe, so I can't pay through PayPal.
Right.
So it's like, I would like to purchase this, but I also don't want my car to get locked.
Mm-hmm.
Because that happened on Saturday or whatever when we were about to go do stuff.
Oh.
So I was like, oh, man. I mean, I had some cash on me, but it was unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this Patreon thing, it's just really bizarre, and they apparently didn't telegraph this to anybody.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's artists like, you know, we patronize Sampikos, and, you know, he had a rough month and didn't produce a lot, you know, and he'd been losing some patrons because of that, but he lost apparently a fuckload.
Mm.
And I saw Tumblr post where an artist said they lost about 100 patrons because of it. And that's a lot of money. Just, I mean, even if it's just $200, but that's not what, nobody's just going just for the $1 in a lot of cases. So,
right, yeah.
You know, this is people's livelihoods that are being randomly impacted by Patreon's bad business practices.
Because I know, like, J.D. LeClaid has, like, five spots that are at a $30 level, and he you get a sketch from him every month, basically, and that level is always sold out, because I would love to do that, you know, and just get like a sketch from him every month. But
Kyle mentioned that he had some of his higher tier ones get declined as well. So suddenly more slots opened, but I'm sure that a lot of the people that were in those slots are not going to be super thrilled they lost them.
And Patreon may have fucked over themselves with this, because I know at least one other person I saw did the same thing I did, which was I linked my PayPal account and then I had it pull from my credit card, the same credit card via PayPal instead. And I bet you PayPal charges higher fees than Stripe does.
Yeah.
So, like, if a lot of people did that just to make it okay again, like, and their system was really, so here's how I did it. Like, I went in there and I hit retry and it was just, and it had the error. It said card expired, but my card isn't expired. So I tried to, like, re-add it, and it was like, you can't add this card because it's already been on here. And I'm like, what the fuck? So that's why eventually I just linked my PayPal. But I didn't get the fraud warning until after I'd, on my phone, until after I put it, tried to put it through a couple of times. So, I mean, my card would probably work okay now. This was not a deliberate thing, like when they accidentally fucked over people by changing their fee structure. That was a deliberate thing. This was an accidental fuck-up on their part, but that's the problem. I was reading an article today about, like, how people are making a living off of YouTube. And, you know, oh, this YouTuber makes, like, $1 million a year or whatever. And I'm like, the article I was reading was about YouTubers that were diversifying. There's, like, a guy that does a YouTube show for kids. And he has this character that he plays. He's all made up and stuff like that. And he's, like, selling hoodies, and he's now got action figures, and like he has all these merch sales that contribute a not insignificant percentage of his income. And that's a smart way to do it.
You got
to
diversify, especially with how,
like, if you're at the mercy of companies like YouTube and Patreon and Twitch, and one of them fucks up, or they kick you off, or they decide to change, they alter the deal. If you're making a living doing this, like, you could be suddenly be like, oh, fuck, I don't have rent money, you know? Yeah,
and with YouTube, when they basically murdered all their small creators after Logan Paul did his dumb shit, the adpocalypse and all that, it really showed people how at the mercy of Google they were. And yeah, it's smart that they diversify. A lot of people stop uploading to YouTube and focusing more on Twitch and then just uploading their VODs. And, you know, you're right about people with the merch. I remember a few years ago, back when Minecraft was still super fucking huge. It's still big, but not nearly as big as it was. There was a line of toys that were Minecraft themed called, like, Tube Heroes or whatever, and it was YouTubers who did Minecraft had action figures made of their shit, of their little character with, you know, whatever thing they had as their shtick, and they sold them. And so, like, they had the merch sales and the hoodies and the whatever else. I mean, but the thing is, you know, it's such a minority of people that are able to actually do that.
Right. Yeah.
You know, John Q. Furry is not necessarily able to do that.
John Q. Furry is more likely to be being supported by Patreon. Like, because we have so many independent artists and writers and other creators.
So that was been kind of like the big topic of the day for us, because it's like, oh no. I mean, yeah, we lost a few patrons, and I hope that they get the memo and are like, oh, well, that's, I'll put my, you know, dollar or two back.
I mean, we're like super broke now. She was going to have to put her dog, Sarah, up for adoption. You know, she can't afford to keep him anymore.
Yeah. Pose just lower maintenance, you know?
I mean, I'd add to insist that our dog, Ajax, get a paper route.
Yeah. And, well, we don't want to say what I have to do. It's just demeaning, but I have to do it.
You're a fox.
Yeah.
We know what you got to do.
Oh, damn it. You're giving the game away.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
that was funny.
So, Shiva, I got to say, How do you feel about the Horde? Long sigh.
Okay, so from the Sylvanas perspective, like Sylvanas is a bitch, I could see like the undead following lockstep behind her, but the rest of the Horde would be, except for the goblins who give no fucks, I mean, the Torn would be like, what the fuck are you doing? Especially the druids. Trolls would not be.
Yep. Tyrant's a Torn.
Yeah. Druids of whatever stripe would be like, fuck you, I'm out. Anything that's a shaman would be, fuck you, I'm out. A lot of the races would be, what the fuck? You just burned the fucking world tree.
And people pointed out that she sent the druids down to Silithus to fuck around with that so that she could have the people that would be like, what the fuck, out of the way. But yeah, it's that came out and everyone's like, oh man, what's actually going to happen? Is it really Jaina? Is it this, that, and the other? No, it's just fucking Sylvanas going like, oh yeah, well, burn the tree after some fucking random night elf was like, Ligma. Ligma what?
Ligma nuts.
And she dies. She's like, ah, burn it down. It's so dumb.
Mm.
And so I don't even have the game installed. So I don't give a shit beyond like, wow, that's stupid. But it's really been divisive. And I've seen like Noxie is like, hey, you know, if you guys are looking to be on the good guy side, we got Halcyon Guild and, you know. And I would have totally, if I had the game installed, like posted a screenshot of my shaman as a Draenei. Mm-hmm. She's like, hey, I think I'm going to go over here for a while, because that character has been a Tauren since day one of me playing WoW.
I hope there's some kind of like lore-wise where everybody kind of goes, what the fuck are you smoking?
I'm just ready for Siege of Orgrimmar 2, Orgrimmar Boogaloo.
I saw like one thing today where basically like Zul'jin and Bane and are all clustered around Sylvanas. Like, she's a Scooby-Doo bad guy, pull off the mask and it's Garrosh.
Yeah.
Underneath it, because
it's old man Garrosh, back from the dead, again! That stone fist must have let you go on old Draenor.
I saw something funny on Reddit about this, where it's basically, you know, everybody goes down, you live until you suffer from crappy writing, you know, and then your form gradually becomes
shiny,
gradually more and more deteriorated until, and then the next comment was like, merely a setback, and someone wrote, Kael Thas for War Chief 2020.
Oh, God.
I mean,
considering that he died, got his ass kicked, had a big green fel crystal shoved in his chest, and his head cut off and brought to the Leeds, he could still be War Chief.
He can get better.
He'd probably do less damage than Sylvanas or Garrosh by virtue of just actually being dead, not undead.
Yeah, so it makes complete sense for just the only section of the Horde it makes sense for is the undead. Kind of for the goblins, because they're just morally ambivalent at the best of the
times.
Yeah. I mean, they like fire, they like explosions, they don't give a fuck about nature or anything other than making money. But the other races of the Horde, the Pandaires, would be like, you did what?
We're going to go back to the turtle.
The Torah would be, especially druids, you did what? The trolls would be almost as, I mean, they can be druids, they can be shamans, and they're still a more spiritual people. They're going to go, what? The orcs might not completely understand or get the significance, because they're all not completely out of this world, but they probably would not be all that cool with burning one of the major pillars of the world.
Well, someone pointed out that every single world tree fragment that Fandral made is now dead, except for the actual last world tree on Hyjal.
Mm-hmm.
So everything has been destroyed except for the actual world tree, which almost got destroyed way back in Warcraft 3. So it's kind of like, wow, that's another thing. Honestly, WoW's been going for, what, 14 years now or something ridiculous? I really think they ought to figure out something different.
Yeah, well, and Jaina's thing was like, yeah, she's been going a little bit more extreme. Yeah, but it was pretty. It made sense lore-wise and personal-wise. You know, it's not like Anduin decided to, I don't know, desecrate something, you know?
Anduin's like, yo, check it out. I'm a paladin and I have 2-hour cooldown stuff like Final Fantasy XI. Check out my sweet ass heal bubble.
Yeah, look, I can, I can battle res and I can bubble at the same time.
They've really, Anduin's grown up to be a good looking dude, let me tell you. That armor he has and just the model, Yeah, he grew up.
I resubbed.
Yeah. And Sarah mentioned that he's back up too. So, yeah.
Raided last night, so.
Yeah, he mentioned that y'all went and slapped the shit out of the first tier of Legion for fun. Which, considering the disparity between the start and end of Legion, it probably was pretty laughable. The only thing that really bums me, though, is, like, everyone's like, wow, this is fucking stupid. So what are gamers gonna fucking do but attack Christy Golden? Like,
that makes no goddamn sense.
Yeah, they're like, oh, but it's a woman writing it. Whee! Get out of my game, Normie. Whee!
Did you say gamers and makes no sense in the same sentence? I mean,
and misogyny? Yeah. And Taryn Gregory was like, hey, these things have been in play long before she even joined us. What the fuck? And then when people were like, oh, well, you know, if she doesn't want to get blah, she shouldn't be in the game. And he was like, shut the fuck up. Fuck you, nerd. It was like he was really strongly defending her.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Christy Golden, she's written some of the books. Now she's in the game doing writing, but she didn't have anything to do with, like, the Warbringer stuff. It's not like there's just one writer for the game.
There's, like, somebody sat down and said, this is going to be the arc we're going to do. Like, there was some kind of mass decision where this storyline was talked about and okayed.
Yeah, but it was not Christy Golden's fault. It is not one person's fault that Sylvanas is like, lol, I'm going to burn down the tree because a night elf sassed me. And then, of course, there was another image that I saw that was that same scene where, you know, she's trying to explain why she's acting like this. And it shows the flashback of her dying to Arthas. Mm-hmm. And she was like, holy shit, you gave up your range advantage to try to melee a Death Knight mounted on a horse with your daggers? That's the fucking dumbest thing I've ever heard. Why are you telling me this? It's not like we were even friends. Holy shit, lol. And then dies, and that pisses her off, and she says, burn it down. So, again, it's WoW. I am personally spending my time playing No Man's Sky. And
I mostly play WoW with my friends, so.
Yeah. I will say, though, that No Man's Sky Next is extremely good. It's a very good podcast chill out game. Like, you pick what you want to do for that session, and you go and fucking do it, and there's no real pressure to have to go, like, oh, I gotta go to the storyline. Oh, I gotta make some money. Oh, I gotta do this. It's like, nope. I've got a cool planet. I'm gonna go bust some rocks and build a base. Or I'm gonna go drive around in my buggy and run over animals. Or I'm accidentally gonna bump a giant monster with my fist as I'm running by, and it decides to stomp me into the dirt, which is hilarious. Very unexpected. So I was flying around in my ship and accidentally shot one of the large ground-based behemoths, one of the big creatures. And it followed my ship until I landed and then came and killed me. It was like, bitch! Just stomped me. It literally two-shot me. Like, took my shields down and then just dead. But they've really done a number on improving that game. It still has a lot of things like, you know, inventory management's a pain and it doesn't explain everything. But the addition of multiplayer mitigates that a lot too, because if you know what you're doing, you can help your friends out. You can invite them to your base and let them use your shit when you've got the advanced stuff. It's got voice chat, so you can explain in-game. And you can also turn off the voice chat if you get joined by a rando and they decide to be a shit.
That's the funny thing about, oh, Blizz has voice chat now. And then while I was on, it's like, you know, voice chat is disconnected. Voice chat is disconnected. Voice chat is disconnected. It's like, guys.
Voice chat with randos is the worst thing in the world. One of the things that really turned me off of playing PUBG is that the moment you land, everybody loads in, you have local proximity voice chat, and it's nothing but 12-year-olds screaming the N-word and calling you a fag, you know? It's great. Video games. So, and that's why I haven't played much more than, like, 5-6 hours of PUBG.
Oh, so you're basically saying it's Xbox Live chat all over again.
Yeah, it totally is Xbox Live fucking class chat, you know?
So, but you're not supposed to talk in school.
Oh, right, well, so how about
the non-gamer makes a random comment?
Well, I was going to say the BronyCon thing.
So what happened there?
All right, so BronyCon.
There was a con.
There was a convention for bronies, which was a mistake. So BronyCon 2018 happened this last weekend. They had like 5,300 people, which is a drop of about 1,000 people from last year, mm-hmm. which had a 2,000-year person drop that, and then 1,000 person before that. BronyCon has shrunk about 50% in the last several years.
Yeah, like, it peaked at like 10K. And I saw an allegation on Twitter that the 10K number was fluffed up. I have no doubt on that.
I mean, they hit 10K and they were like, ah, take that, furries. And we're like, okay. I remember that back in the day.
Were they really like that?
Some of them were, yeah.
Well, fuck them.
Yeah, well, ARK fandom has been going how long? And yours is burning out?
Yeah. They announced that 2019 is going to be their last year. And I know from internal information that the only reason they're doing it next year is they have a contract with City of Baltimore and have to have an event. If they don't decide to declare bankruptcy first, which is always on the table. They're an S Corp. Their shareholders and board are protected, so, you know, they could totally do it. Basically, they just got boned in a lot of minor ways. And the thing is, with conventions like that, expenses are always going up. You're still paying for the same size space, even if your attendance is dropping by chunks.
And they always want to increase your room block commitment and shit like that, even if your attendance is dropping.
They also got boned by one of their hotel contracts. Mm-hmm. That, like, one of the hotels, like, yeah, the room block's $140 a night, when the hotels that were literally across the street were, like, $120, and that didn't have a room block.
So, and if you're in town for 4 or 5 days for a big con, which a lot of big fans are, $20 a night.
Plus the associated difference in taxes, too.
And parking. It all adds up.
Everyone's been flipping out. I say everyone. It's like a lot of bronies have been flipping out about that. And I
can totally understand them. I mean, if Anthrocon was like AC 2019 is our last year, I mean, I could totally understand that. You know, furries would freak the fuck out.
Also, you know, we're furries and we have a wealth of convention options, whereas the bronies no longer do.
So there's BronyCon. What ones are still running?
Every Northwest is in Seattle. You've got BabsCon in the Bay Area. You have High Roller PonyCon, may or may not be coming back, but that was the Vegas one.
They just had their first year this year.
Yeah, it was like 400 people, though. Mm. There's Winnie City, which is in Chicago. Ponyville Starter Fest, which is in Wisconsin. They're owned by the same person. TrotCon in Ohio.
Same person also owns Aquatifer in Denver.
Yeah, the dude that owns them are different than the person that runs those two PonyCons, but that's neither here nor there. And then BronyCon's the only East Coast event now. So when they wrap in 2019, you know,
they'll all be in the western half of the U.S.
Well, as far west as Ohio.
Yeah.
But, you know, TrotCon's not very big either. It's a sub-1,000 attendee convention. So you have BabsCon and Every Northwest, which are like 2,000-3,000 at most, and everybody else is right around 1,000.
The other ones may have a boost, though, because, like, the year when after Rainforest died, MFF and BLFC both had massive attendance increases.
Yeah, I mean, and it is one of those things where everyone's like, oh, but I never got to make it, or I never could support it, and a lot of the replies have been just like, look, the time to support this convention wasn't this year, it was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Right, like, you guys couldn't make it out or whatever, and this is why things are shutting down. Like, Nightmare Knight saw the writing on the fucking wall, and we bailed the fuck out as one of the reasons.
Can I just say, in general, with conventions, when a convention with a fair-sized staff and a board and stuff like that makes a decision, they have all the facts at their disposal. They've probably not come to whatever decision it is lightly.
It's often heartbreaking.
It's often heartbreaking. And then you see all these comments, but why can't they just do this? Why can't they just do that? And it's like, guys, you know,
we have to have money to pay for.
They've made their decision.
Yeah.
You know, clearly considered all of those variables.
You know, they announced that next year because of contractual reasons, but they hadn't even gotten the bill from their hotel. And it's not pretty, from what I know. So basically, they've got themselves in this big financial bind. And there was a thread that you retweeted, Fuzz, that was about, you know, why BronyCon slowly shrank like it did.
Which, I'm not a brony. I just found this interesting from a convention organizing perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was a limiting factor with Nightmare Nights, too, is that the fandom itself is incredibly insular. They didn't want any sort of, like, outside thinning of the, you know, core focus to be away from just ponies.
Yeah, and I remember seeing the very anti-change reaction.
It was super...
Like 2 years ago, I think.
Yeah, and, like, the con walked it back within 48 hours because the intensity of the fandom hatred.
We should say what it was. The decision they made was to open it up to non-pony content, to still have the majority of their programming be Pony related, but to also have some non-Pony stuff start coming in. I mean, maybe slowly transition to like a general animation con at some point.
Because they were going to have like some gaming, maybe some anime, blah, blah, blah. And like, these are things that a lot of nerds also like, but they just got such a massive pushback. And we saw that at Nightmare Nights, and I'm like, well, this puts a timeline on us. We were not going to ever evolve to be like an anime or furry convention because, well, we already have those.
And that's one of the fun things about furry is that it's not limited to just one show. Anytime there's any new animal, people, anything comes out, it brings in fresh blood. We're also not afraid to do non-furry gaming. Well, we used to have a movie run for TFF.
Yeah.
Licensing for that is a nightmare.
Yeah, don't do that.
But we bring in non-furry content just to give our people something to do. Like, we bring in Rocky Horror. We've brought in all kinds of stuff.
We had an escape room.
Yeah.
That's not furry at all.
So we broaden our horizons so you can come and do furry shit, but we have all the stuff that's fun while you're here.
Yeah.
I could share an anecdote from a different fandom from a long time ago. So, like, the first Doctor Who con I went to was called Visions. It was in 1997. It had been running for several years at that point. It was up in Chicago. It eventually went away, and now Chicago TARDIS basically took that spot in the schedule. But the year I went, they had some Babylon 5 guests, and they had Jeri Ryan from Voyager.
Cool.
And it was only her second con ever. In a previous year, apparently, they had John DeLancey. And I overheard people complaining about how, like, Visions had been solely a Doctor Who convention. It didn't have a really Doctor Who-specific name, like Chicago TARDIS does, or WhoFest down here does. But it had been solely a Doctor Who convention, and then they started bringing in guests from other sci-fi shows. And I heard a lot of bitching in 97 about all these non-Who guests. Like, people were complaining, like, oh, they got Jeri Ryan this year. And me, I was like, I was watching Voyager at the time, and I was actually thought it was pretty cool that Jeri Ryan was
there. Yeah, I would think that most nerds would be stoked to see Jeri Ryan.
Like, yeah, but
just on a horniness level.
The old guard. The old, and remember, this is 97, so this is,
well,
Doctor
before.
Who is not on the air at this point. The TV movie had aired the previous year, and that was it, and there was no new Who on the horizon at that point. We're right in the middle of what they call the wilderness years. And so there's older fans of my generation and older, classic Who fans, and at least a certain subset of classic Whovians are a very insular group.
Yeah.
And they did not want any other shows coming into their con. So even back then, I saw that exact same reaction. And then when I saw BronyCon say this a couple years ago, we want to bring in some VAs from other animated series and stuff like that. And the fan reaction, I mean, it honestly didn't really surprise me. I've seen it happen already.
And it's really hard on the con org because they realize that they're the ones that, you know, they capitulated to the feelings of, you know, these people. And they could have just said, fuck it, and gone with it and seen what happens. But they didn't. And now they live in the future they chose, where next year is going to be the last one unless they declare bankruptcy this next year.
I mean, I can't say they made the wrong decision, because if they'd made the other decision, who's to say the outrage wouldn't have just caused them to
lose attendees too?
They were in a no-win situation.
And this was before they knew that the show was going to get to 9 seasons before wrapping up. Like, at that point, I think it was like near season 6, and that was another good ending point because they had just hit the syndication mark where they can permanently syndicate the show. And they kept going. But they were looking at, like, the end of the series and them going, all right, we're going to have to do something else. We want to keep this organization going. And this was also back when, like, Steven Universe was still new. There was other animated shows that were becoming popular at that same time that they could have incorporated.
Mm-hmm.
But the fandom was too insular and they decided against it. So, I mean, it sucks. But it's also, this is what happens when you focus a fandom and a convention around a single property that has a time limit.
Mm-hmm. I mean, from when you started Nightmare Nights, the very first year that you did it, You said it had a limited lifespan. You didn't foresee doing it for forever because you knew that the show would run out of steam eventually. Yeah. You saw what, maybe, you said 4 or 5 years when you first started.
Yeah, and we got five.
Said 3 the first year. Like, I don't see this going past year 3.
And yeah, well, and the reason being that I also didn't know how far the show was going.
Right.
But we also saw the last 2 years where we barely broke even that this was the correct time on the money side of things. Yeah, it's just the nature of a fandom that's based around a show. It's been fucking 8 years. Right? The kids who are ironically enjoying it in, like, middle school and whatever, they're in their 20s. Adult fans are now much older and probably, like, super not cool on, you know, associating with the fandom name anymore, even if they occasionally watch the show. I still haven't seen all the episodes of this season, and a couple that I saw were just stupid. And it sucks, but, you know, on the upside, and this is an upside, Lauren Faust is running the DC Superhero Girls relaunch, and she has Sabrina Abergetti, Sibsy, one of the lead storyboarders on Pony, working for her as her lead storyboarder.
Oh, cool.
And Mitch Larson,
who one of her writers,
as her lead writer.
Nice.
So she's kind of gathering the gang back together that worked with her in, like, the early seasons of Pony.
Mm-hmm. The ones that did really well.
Yeah, so that's cool. You know, there's all these other cartoons out there that are taking mind share, and Pony, the movie, was not a financial success. It was a superb piece of animation, like, with minimal 3D, but it unfortunately did not make money.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a disjointed film because it had been rewritten and rewritten and rewritten. It was well animated, but not a good story. I'll admit that.
I thought it was all right.
It's cute.
And I like that they introduced anthro-animal characters, like walking on two legs,
yeah,
non-ponies. So it sort of slowly eased bronies into being like, hey, you can have an animal OC. It's called a fursona.
Yeah, it's not a horse-sona. It's a fursona. And this guy, it's a lizard-looking thing. They're called scalies.
Gateway drug.
Yep. It really is. You know, a lot of the people that we'd want to keep have come off and become furries. And like
Brayburn is doing all non-pony erotica now.
Yeah.
And he still does some, doesn't he? Do some pony
erotica? He does a lot with, like, Teen Spike because he's a dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And people are hot for his, like, aged-up Spike with a big old dick. And he can TF into being bigger. So he's done a couple pieces which are really funny. There's, like, one that was, like, a little squirrel trying to be like, I'm gonna get that dick. Except it's a little, you know, squirrel versus a dragon dick.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, like, gross or anything, but it was just extreme size diff, which is amusing. Yeah, so it sucks, but this is what happens when you tie your entire event to a single fandom. Like, the thing about furry is we don't need a show or anything to draw from. We'll make our own shit. And
yeah, and there's plenty of animal critter stuff that feeds into us, like Zootopia and everything else. Every time there's a new... Yeah.
There's a cat girl in She-Ra.
Yeah.
Sing, Isle of Dogs, all these things that, like, appeal to furries. And kind of, there's an interesting meme that was being quote tweeted, like, tell me what your furry gateway drug was. And everyone's saying all these different kinds of things that got him into this kind of artwork over the years. And
for me, it was Robin Hood. I literally found furry art while trying to search for Robin Hood related stuff on the proto internet on AOL 3.0 on a 28.8 modem.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't find Robin Hood, but I sure found some foxes.
Mm-hmm.
So that was definitely my gateway drug. What about you guys?
Thundercats was mine. Ninja Turtles. Those are both of my two lead-ins. Yeah.
I watched a lot of stuff when I was younger that probably definitely led me to liking anthro animals as an art form. Like, basically all the Disney afternoon shows. But I didn't discover furries until I was doing a search for werewolves in the college computer lab. And I found a Wookiee picture. and it wasn't even like a super explicit one. It was like a male, I could tell. It was just a little ball sack scruff. It wasn't super explicit. From profile howling at the moon. And I thought it was a cool piece of artwork. And I was like, oh, he's a boy wolf. And I discovered this thing called furry. And
yeah. Well, it was like me with those two unicorns fucking by Chris Goodwin. I'm like, oh, wait, they're both boys. This is fine. So, yeah, I mean, everyone has their gateway drug. And if, you know, we get some good furries out of the smoldering remains of bronydom, cool.
I mean, they'll always have a place in furry because they're anthro animals.
Yeah. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, you know what? We got things that are horses, but also lots of other things that aren't.
Honestly, but you walk around any furry con, especially a large one like AC, you're going to see a shitload of pony merch in a dealer's room. You're going to see a shitload of people wearing a Rainbow Dash t-shirt or having a pony backpack or something.
It's they're pretty like, well integrated.
Yeah, they're... I mean, this is just another anthro thing for most furries.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe a few years ago when bronies were being super obnoxious, there was an anti-brony sentiment. But I don't really think that's the case these days.
Yeah, I think a lot of them, like, that filtered into the furry fandom kind of chilled their shit out.
They were kind of the rebellious teens, and now they've all calmed their shit down, and they've joined the rest.
And it's nice to see, like, a lot of good pony people that I knew showing up and being at Anthrocon. Like, Scope showed up.
Yeah.
Of all people, right? And... You know, so it's other artists and people that I know. They're like, "Oh, hey, you're here," and I'm like, "Yeah, here, buy some porn." You know, they're like, "Wait a minute, aren't you?" Yep. You know, it's like, "Yeah,
I've been a dirty furry longer than I've been a brody."
Yeah, like I'm here. I've been selling porn for Planet for a decade. Buy some books. Speaking of furry stuff, we were talking about furry apparel and whatnot.
Oh yeah,
because I've been totally rocking my furry shirts around the place. Mm-hmm. I got a couple of like I wore my it was a discontinued Hyena Agenda design that was like a hyena with Baron Samedi face paint looking, and it has a couple snakes with pink and magenta or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's an older Hyena Agenda one, but I wore that and got a couple nice compliments from that.
I swear, whenever I wear a furry shirt around, like, random people always comment on it. The Furry Fiesta shirt by Laura Garabedian.
People love that.
People love that. And anytime I wear one of J.D. LeClaid's Werewolf, Ask the Werewolf t-shirts.
Those are always good, too.
Like, people love that. I was just out randomly one day, and I was like, and a guy was like, "What's that on your shirt?" I was like, "It's a fat werewolf playing an electric guitar." He's like, "Okay, cool." It was the lunatic
one.
Yeah.
I really hope that the transfer for the three werewolf moon shirt that he's doing is better than the other transfer, because I'm really interested in getting one.
I've ordered one. Go ahead and order it ASAP, because it's like... It's a campaign on that t-shirt site right now. Like, they're aiming to get 50 sales, and it had like 8 or 9 last time I checked.
I'll look at it, because I like that guy's art.
Yeah.
And he seems to be a decent-ass dude on his Twitter, too, so that's important.
Yeah, I follow him on Patreon, so that's how I've already read Ask the Werewolves, because I got it as the pages were being completed and released.
That's cool.
Yeah. If you... do eventually get your download, you'll see my furry name in the supporters list.
Like, I've worn my Hyena Agenda all overs. I've worn the... People also really like the Artcore Coyote shirt that I got. And I've worn...
I like that one. That thing's super cool.
The really cute Chibi Fox one out, too. Mm-hmm. Like, I told you guys I was going to become that guy that just wears furry shirts around, but they're, like, the nice subtle ones. Mm-hmm. And I'm totally doing that. Like, getting rid of a lot of my older, rattier shirts, sort of more just meh.
Another one that gets good reactions is the Hootopia ones.
Yeah, that one's really
Nick
cute.
Nick and Judy is 10 and his companion with the TARDIS. Like, I've got two of those. Different designs, but completely different artists.
I'm looking forward to the point that I'm pointing to is that Maul is doing their, like, pastel summer collection that released this comes out tomorrow as of this recording, but like day of or yesterday by the time you actually hear this, that I'm actually looking forward to seeing.
Unless you're listening to this 2 years from now, and like
then hopefully Maul's still around,
and hopefully America's not a post-apocalyptic wasteland.
Yeah, I mean, this could totally be like the last podcast before the nukes fall, and then you'll never get your pastel summer. You know, we have an irradiated summer.
Oh God.
But that's coming up soon. So, how do you guys feel about Sylveon's?
I hear Sylveon's trans, and I'm down with that. I support them.
Love and respect your trans Sylveon's.
I respect my trans Sylveon's. I only know who Sylveon is because of Acello always putting the character in his artwork.
Yep.
Yeah. So this is...
Because I don't follow Pokemon super
closely. This is just the dumbest thing that got people to say this everywhere. So on the internet, there's always somebody that is way too fucking intense into something and is going to scream about someone else's headcanons.
Right.
So, if y'all are aware, Sylveon's colors are pink, blue, and white, which are do correlate with the trans flag.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a cute fairy Pokemon, actually very good for its type. And I really like it because it's just a pretty Pokemon. But, you know, this person was like, oh, you know, Sylveon's trans. And
that's my headcanon.
Then, yeah,
that makes sense.
Like, this person decided they had like a Telegram or Twitter account, like Sylveon Defender or whatever. And like, they made this angry blog post about like, the colors don't match. And this is a children's game. How dare you bring sexuality into this? Blah, 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 blah. And what got people going on Sylveon is trans is this Sylveon Defender basically made a block together list that mm-hmm. auto adds anybody that types the phrase Sylveon is trans in Twitter.
Yeah.
So immediately everybody who gives half a shit and doesn't want to interact with anybody who would use a block list getting mad about people having a headcanon about the sexuality of a given Pokemon immediately starts saying, oh, well, Sylveon is fucking trans and I love them. They're great. I love and respect trans Sylveon. They're my family, and I love them. And immediately, you're like, you're closing yourself off from anybody dumb enough to use this block list. And it's also gotten some cute art out of it, too. Mm-hmm. But it's just one of those. Here's
yeah, because now more people are drawing Sylveon as a trans character than they ever did before. So
yeah, there was a really.
This is totally a Streisand effect.
Yeah. And there was a really cute pic. Like, this is the straightest pic ever. And it was like trans feminine Sylveon and trans mass Sylveon, like one shiny, one not. And they're like holding hands. And like, this is. They're straight. See?
Yep.
You know, and it's funny. But this has been meme time with Chef Sandy.
Yes. I had
to explain the meme.
Yes.
But I thought it was really funny because I was immediately like, oh, I'm going to get on a block list, like, willingly. Mm-hmm. And then I said the magic phrase and then screen capped, you blocked by this person. I'm like, problem solved. Like, I had already blocked them, so I don't know how they block me. But whatever.
Well, if it's an auto-programmed thing.
I don't know. It was funny. I thought they were being an idiot, and now everyone's drawing cute Sylveon, so, I mean, it all works out.
Yeah.
Like, more cute Pokemon is better.
I'm like, how do you tell a trans Sylveon versus a not?
Well,
do they all just look like a Sylveon?
Well, I mean, if you want to get down to the nitty-fucking-gritty, Pokemon can communicate with their trainers. They have language that they can communicate cross-species with, even if humans don't understand it. And at least Anime Mouth knows fucking English. So he can be like, yo, Sylveon's like blah, and translate for you. So, like, there are various ways where you could find out. But mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be because it's somebody's fucking headcanon. It doesn't matter. That also reminds me of the image, like before HRT, X years after HRT, and it was like the first doctor, 13th doctor,
yeah,
2,000 years HRT.
Yeah. Savin sent that to me, and it's sad that LOL is such an overused expression that I had to tell you I literally laughed out loud.
Yeah. Because I'm just like, haha, or. Lol. And it's like, no, actually it got a good laugh out of me and I figured you'd enjoy it.
Yeah. Like, I need to like further clarify that because just saying LOL. No,
I actually did indeed laugh to your joke. Good job.
Not just amused, but I actually laughed.
So in furry excellence news, Fox and Pepper have crossed the $30,000 mark on their Kickstarter. Which means that they have hit their final stretch goal, I think.
I thought it was 35.
All right, well, I have it linked right here, so I'll pull it up.
Link in the show notes.
Link in the show notes. Kickstarter.com. Just search for Spread Thy Wings. But yeah, those guys are doing great. They got 11 days left as of this recording, so like a week or so, a little more than a week after the time you guys hear this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go down to the campaign and look at the stretch goals, because... No, 35, yeah. 35,000 is Live Symphonic Orchestra with orchestration by Tanya Song, who also worked with Fox on his previous studio albums, Dreamcatcher, Come Find Me. So they are at, right now, $30,616 with 10 days to go, 394 backers. So they still have a little bit to go before they hit their final stretch goal, but, you know, they crossed the third big round number for them, which is really cool.
I backed it. Have you?
Yep. Like,
question for the list.
Unlike some Kickstarters, I can count on these guys to put out the music, you know?
Right, yeah.
It's like that.
I've actually been incredibly lucky. We were talking about this earlier, how you and your mate have kickstarted a bunch of stuff and like a couple of relatively expensive things that you never got.
Yeah.
And I've actually kickstarted more than I think I have. I was thinking it was like a half dozen. It's probably more like a dozen. And I've gotten everything I've ever kickstarted except for the stuff that hasn't come out yet. And I have to think part of that is that because I kickstart a lot of furry stuff.
Yeah.
And the furries seem to be pretty on top of things. Like, I've done, like a couple of the Sofa Wolf ones. I've done Fox and Pepper ones before. I'm wearing my Faux Paws socks.
They have right the paw now. On the bottom.
They have, yeah, they're... It's hard to really tell the shape because I'm wearing them all day and they've kind of rolled down a little bit. But, like, the whole leg is supposed to look like the leg of a different animal. And it has a little...
cute.
Yeah, it has a little paw print on the bottom. Like, these aren't the Fox ones. I don't know what these ones are, but like I have a fox pair that has like a bright orange and a black, and you know, and a little paw print. They're called faux paws. They're cute. I think I saw a person say not long ago that they're going to do another round on Kickstarter at some point. So
yeah,
so they're cute.
And in further furry excellence, this weekend is Evo, the big fighting game tournament,
right?
And our boy Sonic Fox is going to be there, and I wish him the best of fucking luck as he kicks the ass of all these salty gamer boys as a queer furry of color, hopefully with his fursuit head on, because...
I loved seeing the salty comments, like, you lost to this faggot in a fursuit.
I love his description on Twitter is, I'm a black queer furry who will mix your shit in fighting games. Sup.
This is like his verified 50,000 follower... official with his gaming studio. Yeah,
69,000.
Oh, okay.
313 followers.
All right.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah. I thought I followed that fool. I do now. 314 followers. Mm-hmm.
The only reason I don't follow him is because I'm not into gaming at all. And being that that's his thing, he talks about gaming a lot.
Yeah. And also being like hella gay, which is great.
Yeah, I'm cool with him being hella gay.
Oh, here he is in Vegas with his friends, with his fursuit head and a dog. It's like this white German Shepherd, like, what the fuck are you? How are you, friend? Hello. So that's cool as hell.
Hello, big dog friend.
I'm looking forward to seeing him hopefully kick major ass at DBFZ. And that one's going to be super fierce because it's like got 5,000 entrants this year or something like
that. What does that mean? Oh, there's many entrants.
Yeah, okay, entrants. As in, like, there are that many people competing in the mega.
I thought
tournament.
You said like 5,000 entrants, and I thought it was like a high stakes poker game where you had to put in $5,000 to even get in or to the tournament or something like that. And I was like, they do that? Really? And it's like, no, that's not what you meant. Okay.
No, that's the big game. And he also plays some other stuff too, but. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to seeing him compete, and I hope he does really well, because he's a really, 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 really skilled dude, and a cool dude, and a black queer furry, so it's like, yes, hit all those marks, be out there, be that furry excellence that we want to see out there in the gaming space.
Yeah.
So, big props to him.
You know, he's hopefully someone who is knocking a milkshake duck.
Yeah, don't milkshake duck, dude. Please don't.
He seems pretty with it, though,
yeah.
from what I've seen, so I don't see that happening. At the very least, I doubt he's going to be racist against black people.
Yeah, so. that would be a talent. That'd be something to pull off. Don't actually pull off, you know.
Yeah.
Please don't.
It's not something we want you to do.
So, Fuzz.
Yo.
You went to Tennessee.
I did, yes.
We haven't talked about that this week. So
you did a thing.
You did a thing.
I did a thing. So... this is somewhat frustrating to me. So Fox and Pepper on their thing have a like a $2,000 level at Kickstarter where you get to go to the studio in Tennessee where they're going to be recording this next album. And you get to basically be there for like 4 days in the studio. And it starts Labor Day Monday. So it's basically right after Method. And I'm like, shit, I can't go to that because I don't have enough PTO off of work. So even if I had the cash, I was like, fuck, man, I would totally do that, you know? And what's kind of funny about that is that I was in Nashville last week where they're going to be recording in like a month. And I'm like, this is so weird. Like, I'm here and they're not. And I kind of wanted to be here when they were here. So I'm tweeting at Pepper all weekend about, hey, I'm at this restaurant. And he's like, where? And I'm like 2 miles away from the studio you're going to be recording at. And he's like, dude, get Nashville ready for us. And I was like, I will. I probably failed to because I'm a total lightweight. The printer that we use is owned by Ingram, which is like the largest print-on-demand company in the continent, I believe. I think that's what they said. Maybe even bigger than that. They print a lot of stuff, basically. They reached out to me, and they had a total of 53 small and medium-sized publishers that they invited to Nashville for a 2.5-day event where they basically, part of it was salesmanship. Part of it was they were like, here's some of our new services that we're going to tell you about that we'd like you to sign up for. And part of it was like a lot of general information and seminars that help out your publishing. You know, like I took like an hour and a half class on metadata, like how to like tweak your book description and your keywords and choosing the right bisect categories for your books and stuff like that to like give them traction on Amazon and other retail outlets and stuff like that. But like, I know this sounds really corporate lingo, but I legit felt like a valued client because I went out there and, you know, they paid for all the food. Like, they had breakfast and lunch at their headquarters where we were. And then in the evening, they took us out to dinner. And we went to this place called Woolworth on Fifth, which is an old Woolworth store back in the day. And it's actually famous. It's a historical, whatever it is, it's on the historical register. Because there was a famous sit-in protest back in the days of segregation there. So there's like an upstairs place and there's like a downstairs section. In the downstairs section, Ingram had rented out for us. And I'm down there and I'm talking to my sales rep and I'm like, this little space down here is kind of reminds me of like, this could have been a speakeasy like back in the 30s. And then my sales rep lay some fucking knowledge on me and says, actually, this is where the segregated section was when this was a Woolworth. Upstairs, there was the white Woolworth and the pharmacy for the white people. And downstairs was the quote, colored section. And they had their own pharmacy downstairs because, you know, God forbid black and white people can get their medications at the same counter, you know. So that was the story of this building and why it was so famous. And years after it stopped being a Woolworth, it's now a very highly regarded restaurant. And they had an open bar because it's a big corporate event. And they make their drinks super strong. Like, I ordered a rum and coke. I had one drink. It was a very, very light tan, like lighter than a cardboard box. Like there was.
It once passed by a Coke bottle.
Yeah. It's sort of like.
It's the LaCroix of rum and Cokes. Yeah, exactly.
Here's a glass of rum. Now somebody upstairs is going to yell Coca-Cola. There's your rum and Coke.
Nice.
So I'm sitting there and like, I'm a lightweight with alcohol. I've talked about this before. I don't drink a lot. Tieran finds it hilarious how I can have like one or two drinks at New Year and be like, I'm feeling tipsy, honey.
And this is why
alcohol.
This is why you host New Year's so you don't have to drive or go anywhere.
Right, right.
You can be tipsy in your own house.
Yeah. And like, have you seen me mildly intoxicated at my New Year party?
If I did, I didn't notice because I was already tipsy myself.
Probably.
I have gotten seriously hammered at your New Year's parties before, sometimes unintentionally.
So, and the reason Tieran finds this all hilarious is that when we were touring houses to buy our house, the feature that I really liked about our house was the beautiful wet bar.
It is a very pretty wet bar.
I was like, oh, this is the gorgeous feature. And he's like, honey, you don't even drink. And I'm like, but entertaining.
But you have party. Friends that do.
I have friends that partake of alcohol. And I was like, yeah, this is going to be real. And I know he likes it. And his friends come over and they have drinks and stuff like that. And it's just a thing that I think is cool about my living room. But I'm telling Tyrion, like, I had like a quarter of this tumbler of rum and coke. Of rum. And I'm like, I'm having a drunken conversation with my sales rep. Woo! Which is nice. I got to know him better. This is a guy who's been my sales rep for like 3 or 4 years now.
He's well accustomed to your stuff.
Yes. And got to meet him in person, got to talk, got to ask a couple of questions. I picked up one of the coolest thing was actually networking with other publishers. Because being a publisher at a small press, there's not a lot of people you could talk to on a regular basis about your particular challenges and the kind of stuff you deal with and everything like that. So, like, all the publishers basically agreed calculating royalties is hella complicated and Amazon is the devil.
Yeah, well, we know that.
and that was based, but I picked up tips from other publishers and stuff like that. And so I was talking to a dude, and like most small press publishers, they do the majority of their sales through Amazon. And if they're more successful, they get like books into bookstores and they sell in Barnes & Noble and stuff like that. So I'm like, Amazon is like a side concern to me. Like, I'll add books to Amazon sometimes as I get the time to do it, but it's not my primary focus. And I'm telling this guy, I'm like, probably 80, 90% of my book sales are direct to customers. They're either via my website or they're from me at a convention table. And the guy was like, I really envy you that, not having to rely on Amazon to that degree. How did you achieve that? And I'm like, and you know, and I told probably 3 or 4 people about the whole furry thing this weekend, and nobody really thought it was really strange or freakish or anything like that. But I told him, like, oh, I've been part of this community for like 20 years. So when I started up a publishing company, I was publishing for that community for stuff that I like to buy and sell. And so I was already pretty much networked into the community of my genre, my customer base. So, you know, now we go to these conventions and we sell our books. And he's like, oh, that's really cool. Can I have your card? And I gave him my card. And one of my business cards has Rory on it holding a stack of books. Mm-hmm. And on the back it has the names of our imprints and their websites. He's like, well, I'll remember you. You're the furry guy. And I'm like, yep, I'm the furry guy. But it was...
My werewolf fiction features actual werewolves.
Yes. It was really gratifying, you know, to like to be invited, to be treated like I was a big deal, which sounds silly in one way, but like I sort of downplay Fur Planet a lot in my head. It's like, oh, it's just this little thing we do. And then I have writers and artists that are like, dude, you're a significant chunk of my income. Like, I couldn't do this without you. And that makes me feel really good. And then going to this event where I'm surrounded by other publishers and I'm talking to them and I'm an equal and like, and they're teaching us all this stuff. It was a really enjoyable trip. The other thing we got to do, God, this was so fucking cool. We got to tour the factory floor, the actual printing facility, which is actually like a tour that they do for other groups. Like if you get a group together and you want to do a tour, like they do like a school tour or something like that. Cause I noticed there was signs above some of the areas that said tour stop 1, you know, tour stop 7, whatever. And walk around and see like this amazing print on demand operation in progress. Like it's really hard to describe to someone that doesn't have a boner for paper and binding machines like I do.
Hey, the first time I came over and helped you make books, and when we got done, we had an actual, like, looks like you just pulled it off the shelf at Barnes & Noble. I was like, a little part of me just went, ah, I'm so in cool. love. Yeah, so imagining seeing that on a grander scale.
Yeah. So what's funny is, like, so we're walking over to the area where the binding happens, and I smell something, and it's very familiar. And I say to my tour guide, I'm like, I know that smell. And she's like, oh, you do? And I was like, yeah, back when we first started, we have binding equipment at home, and we were printing and binding all of our books ourselves. So that melted glue smell mm-hmm. from the binders, it is exactly the same on their massive industrial binding machines as it is on my little desktop size home binder. And when I walk behind one of the binding machines, it's even fueled the same way. It's those little tiny balls or chunks of glue
mm-hmm.
that go into the thing and then get melted and end up binding on the spine. And I smelled that. And I was like, oh my God, it brings you back. It brings me back. And it's so amazing that they're doing exactly what I was doing, except on a massive, massive scale.
It's a very nostalgic, you know, mm-hmm. when you were.
Yeah. The other thing, God, I got to tell you guys this. So, like, I don't think I mentioned this before. So their printers are supplied by paper that is on a roll. And it is a roll twice the size of your coffee table.
So pretty big.
So jeez. Massive. And probably
about 14 feet or so.
Probably about yay tall. And I know the people at home cannot see how high I'm raising
almost
my hand.
As high as a couch.
Yeah. And that's just one roll. And they took us back to the storage area where all the paper is.
Yeah, I should clarify. Not like the seat of the couch. We're talking almost to the top of a couch.
Yeah.
Like the back.
That's a singular roll that are on these big carts that they'll have to roll back and forth when they're feeding the printers. And they have these things stacked on top of each other, almost to the roof. Like, this is a stack of rolls of paper taller than my house.
Wow.
You know, that's... you look up and you see pillars of paper. I'm sorry if I'm boring the shit out of anyone that's listening, because this was just really amazing to me. And what's cool is that this part of the production facility is air conditioned.
Mm-hmm.
And this area is also humidified. Like, there's humidifiers in the ceiling putting out just the right amount of moisture to maintain the exact temperature and humidity that they need to make the paper happy. It's great that it has the side effect of making the workers happy being in an air conditioned environment.
Mm-hmm, but it's for the paper.
But it's primarily, it's to keep the paper happy. And I was just like, oh my God, like so much goes into this operation. They print them three up. So three pages side by side by side.
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes off the printer and it goes into this machine that folds them all over. And then at the end, it spits out the book block, which is an unbound chunk of folded over paper that's all the pages. And then they take those stacks over to the binding area where they're matched up with their covers. And everything is barcode controlled. So, like, the last page of the book has the barcode on it. The covers have the barcode on it so that they can match, hopefully correctly, the barcode and the cover. I don't know if you guys remember a Doctor Who episode that's several years old now. It's when the 10th Doctor encountered the Cybermen for the first time. And there's this cyber conversion machine that you see from below as just this CGI series of big arms reaching down and, like, disassembling people, basically. So that is what I thought when I saw their massive industrial-sized cutter. It's this thing that you put an uncut book into, and it trims the top, bottom, and edge. And it's all automated. So it scans the barcode. The barcode tells the machine, this book is a 6x9 paperback. This book is an 8.5x11 magazine, whatever. And it automatically adjusts all of its sizes and trims it just right. And then spits out this finished book onto a conveyor belt where people then take and they do the order sorting and they send it over to the sorting side of the thing. And this thing is just, I mean, you know, we were there on a typical day for the employees. You know, this place is running constantly. And it was maybe like a 20, 25 minute tour, and they produced 1,200 books.
Is this the same place that binds Fiesta's con books, or do you guys use someone else now?
We have used them for Fiesta's con book in the past. We couldn't get the pricing quite right for the 2018 one, so Tieran went with a local printer for that, because our book is in color.
But they've made Fiestas in the past, which is cool.
They have made Fiestas in the past. They've made, did they make all of Nightmare Nights con books?
Yeah, we went through them.
So they made all five of Nightmare Nights con books, and they've made at least 3 or 4 years of Fiesta at this point. So yeah, they're familiar with our stuff, definitely. Actually, this facility for the Fiesta books, I think 1 year they actually, like, if it's for a very large order like that, like 3,000 copies of a single book, they have contracts with a lot of other printers. So I believe last year's Fiesta book was actually manufactured in Arlington, Texas. Like, it was actually done semi-locally. Because they contracted out to somebody that was in our area, basically.
Neat.
Yeah. And, like, I was looking around to, am I going to see any of my books, like, sitting partially assembled or on a sorting table or something like that? And talked to another publisher. He was like, yeah, I'm totally doing that, too, because I placed a big order right before we came out here. And I was looking around to see if my books were here. And this is how cool they were. They actually looked up this guy's order, and they were able to tell him, no, sorry, your order is being printed in, like, the North or South Carolina facility. But, like, the fact that they actually went to the bother of pulling up his order in their system and seeing what print facility it went to so they could tell him if any of his books were going to be in the building we were in. Like, you know, it's a little thing, but they made the effort, and I thought that was cool.
It would have been really cool to go through and see, like, Fur Planet stuff running off. And it's like, eee, that's mine.
I'd be I'll like,
see
you that's one of mine. Yeah.
I'll see you in a couple weeks.
Yep. So the thing I was going to point out that was also very cool for me on a personal level is that, you know, for 3 days, I'm interacting with people. I'm going to all these seminars. I took a plant tour. I could not have done this a year ago. Like, my back is just so much better now. Like, I would have been totally miserable doing this a year ago. And, like, I didn't even, like, and I'd actually brought a couple of my high-powered pain prescription pills with me.
Did you need them at all?
I didn't need them at all.
Awesome.
Yeah. I had, like, the normal mild ache I have after a long day, you know, and I did take a bottle of Advil with me. My worst pain all weekend was a fucking insistent sinus headache that I took some Aleve for on the first day, and it was gone. But that was the only real reason I needed a painkiller.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So on a personal health level, I was very happy about that. So that was good.
So how about you, Shiva? What have you been up to?
Well, today's my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. 41 today.
Yay!
It was a weird birthday. Like, 40 was no big deal. 40 was, hey, because way back in the day, folks know, I've mentioned it several times, when I was 27, I got really sick. I had a stroke. Survival likelihood was fairly low. And, you know, I was not given a terribly good long-term prognosis. I was told
you said 35, you'd be lucky to hit or something.
No, like I was told that 30 was unlikely.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah, and then 40 was a lot less likely. Like, so for years, it's didn't really expect to see 40. And that really affected me in my 30s, because I didn't make a lot of, like, long-term planning because I didn't expect to see it. But 40 was like, I made it. Like, it's cool.
The big 4-0.
Big 4-0. And a lot of people, like, once people hit their 30s, I've heard a lot of, like, oh, God, I'm 30, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I made it another lap around the sun. I'm happy.
Yeah.
Well, it's like I hit 40, which I honestly didn't expect to see for many years. It's like, I made it. Well, 41 has been weird because I didn't expect to make it this far. And now I'm looking of like, oh, I might actually get to see 50, 60. I might actually get to see what growing old is like.
Mm-hmm.
So it was...
You know, sorry to interrupt you. I want to say, I feel like a switch had to be flipped a couple years ago because you bought a house, and that is a long-term commitment.
It did, but I honestly, in ways, didn't really expect to see it out. Does that make sense? I mean, I did it.
It does, but it kind of says to me that, like, maybe on a subconscious level, part of you started planning long-term instead of just the next 5 years.
It did. It was also getting really tired of sharing walls with other people, and I really couldn't see spending money to rent a house that I couldn't really make any changes to.
Yeah.
And spending the same money on renting a house that I could have been sinking into, you know, paying for one, you know. So it's kind of like investing in a nest egg instead of paying somebody else's rent. Mm. At least be reinvesting into something I own.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it wasn't, it was a switch flip then, but it was also not really expecting to live to see out the mortgage all the way.
I signed my mortgage paper and I was like, I'll be 66, I think it was, when this is paid off. Seemed an impossibly far away date.
Yeah, and that was part of it too. I kind of foresee it's like, okay, have it for a couple, you know, have it for however many years and then probably eventually sell it and cash out, and the guys would have a chunk of change to take with them.
Yeah.
But 41 has been like, it's actually been a little bit more darker and in ways depressing, like, than I expected to be. And usually then birthdays have been like my entire life, because I usually enjoy my birthday immensely. And this one has been kind of...
It's just another year?
No, it's been kind of... It's like, oh, I'm getting older. I'm starting to have health issues. I'm starting to get the aches and pains that comes with, you know, getting older. It's like, oh, I might have to live with things getting a little bit not working as well.
Middle age.
Yeah. So it's been a weird birthday for me.
I'll tell you what made me feel better about worrying about that was I was walking with Tieran outside on a really windy day, and the wind kept blowing my hair, and I have this little thinning spot at the back of my head. And I was like, God, the back of my head is freezing because this wind is blowing on my not quite bald spot. And Tieran turned to me and said, well, that's your fault for living so long. And I was like, you know what? I'm never going to bitch about a receding hairline or anything again, because that just meant I lived long enough to have that happen.
You're still here.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what all the years leading up to this one has been. And like I said, it's not usually this way. It's just usually, this one's been more melancholy than the other ones have been.
Aw, don't be melancholy.
But going back to what you were saying, so I used to... You and the whole paper binding thing. I used to work in restaurants, and I enjoyed it. It was just hard to make any money at it. But there's a couple of restaurant supply stores here in town where when I go into it and I see all of the old kitchen equipment that I used to use in, like, the industrial kitchens, and it's like, my friends, I remember you. I've made so much giant vats of white sauce when I worked for this pizza company. In this particular container that they're still making. And it was a very much a, oh, there you are. So, and but that was just tying back to the old...
The nostalgia of seeing that stuff, yeah.
And I did buy some of it because I missed it. Like, I've got several pans and such that I bought from there because I knew how to use them and I had a purpose for them.
What's that new magic machine you guys have that I can never remember the name of?
Sous vide?
Yes, that.
But. Oh, yeah, Vache Dragon Sous Vide.
That was so good.
The Instant Pot's my toy that I've been using. But that's fun. But yeah, he's been sous viding everything. He sous vide a pork loin tonight. Yeah,
I literally never heard that term before. Like, the last time I was over here and Sarah, like, pointed it out to me on the counter. Because I saw it and I was like, what the fuck is that? He was like, oh, we're sous viding this stuff. It was some kind of vegetable. I don't remember what it was.
I don't remember.
Spinach or some kind of greens. I don't remember. One of y'all was sous-viding something, and I was like, so what the fuck is that? Because I'd never heard of it before. Because I'm a Philistine, I guess.
Basically, you vacuum sealed a bag of whatever and pop it in a water bath, and it's basically this combination of pump and heating element. And it sucks in water and spits out heated water, a particular temperature. I like it. It's really good on meat. Like, if you want a medium rare steak, you set it to medium rare temperature, and it will hold it at that temperature pretty much infinitely. It will never go over medium rare doneness, which when you take it out of the bag, it's basically boiled meat. So you then, which if you cook it in like a marinade or anything else like that, it really flavors whatever you're cooking. Then you take it and you put, get a screaming hot, I've got cast iron, screaming hot pan, and just sear the outside so you don't have that nasty boiled meat texture. You get that nice crust that...
It seals in the flavor.
It just gives that nice roasty, like, seared flavor that you get on the outside of, like, a nice steak. Cool. Or, in our case, pork roast.
Yeah, because, like, the inside was super tender, and it was delicious.
So he's been playing around with that, like, the last couple weeks when he got it. I actually haven't tried it yet. That's been his toy that he's been using. I mean, I found him, like, a whole channel on YouTube for how you sous vide all kinds of shit. And he's used a couple of their recipes and techniques, and steaks were really good. I'm not so sure about the salmon he did, but he's tried it on pork tenderloin, and tonight was pork loin, and the pork loin was good. The pork tenderloin, which, despite the similarity of names, is from a completely different part of the animal, apparently. The tenderloin was even better than tonight. And it's usually tenderloin, and loin is really dry. It's really hard to do because if you do it in the oven, it dries out. It's kind of uneven. He did the tenderloin in the sous vide and then just browned it in the pan to just kiss it and make it a little bit more done. Tonight was good. The tenderloin is amazing. And it's also freaking cheap. You can get like a big one for like $2.50.
Wow.
$2.50.
Damn.
And they usually come in double packs, so $5. And you got two meals for four people. So for $5, that's eight meals. That's pretty cheap.
Mm-hmm. So as an aside on the what can't you do in a sous vide? You can make cookies in a sous vide machine. It requires a special like variant on the recipe, but you can totally do some baking in a sous vide machine.
Yeah, you can pretty much anything. I've seen vegetables, all kinds of meats. I've seen, well, potatoes are a vegetable, but they're also a little more like a starch.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of things. It's perfect temperature control. It's a nice little gadget. I can't say it's something I would have ever bought, but I'm glad to have it in the house.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it takes 3 hours to make, but you can
totally
do it.
I would do that in an oven for slow roasting of meat anyway, so...
Well, the cookies.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, it's totally the jar method, which I've seen him do with, like, a custard or something like that once.
That was,
Maybe that's what it was.
That was, dulce de leche.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is just, you take a jar of, condensed milk, put it in that, and let it go. And you also don't have to watch it.
Yeah.
You just set a temperature, and it holds it there. You can walk away. It's fine. Mm-hmm. I think his actually talks to Bluetooth, so he could actually check, like, where it is on his phone.
Right. There's an app for that.
Yeah. It's a wonderful little doohickey. Oh, good news is, so today is actually a really good day. So my birthday's today.
Uh-huh.
Vash's is, so I'm the second. Vash's is the fifth.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a nice happy birthday. Yesterday, him and Siam used to work for one company.
Mm-hmm.
Fall, Siam left that company to join mine. Vash left that company to go contracting because they both of them was treating him like shit.
Yeah.
Today he yesterday he got brought on perm. So he's no longer a contractor. He's a legit employee. So happy birthday to him because he actually has he'll have all the benefits and everything else.
Is he at the same company in Siam?
No, different company.
Just different company, but he brought on for perm.
But it's happy birthday to you. You got like a full like job with like benefits. And
they didn't string him along for 5 years as a contractor or something like that. That's really great.
I think it's been like 8 months, so it's not like a fast transition, but still. Happy birthday, you got a fucking perm position.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Now they treat you like a person.
Well, I mean, as much as any,
you know, big job will. But, yeah. So, Saverin, any other topics there you want to hit?
There was a nice bit of comeuppance for a dumbass.
Oh, yes.
So, this happened... I got to pull it up because it was a couple of days ago and I read it. Basic story, guy is cut off or there's a traffic incident. This is a road rage incident.
From what I read, it was his fault. Yeah, he was trying to drive straight through a turn only lane and nearly hit another guy. And the other guy honked his horn at him. He followed the guy 2 miles.
To his house.
To his house.
The guy's name is Jeff Whitman. And he shows up in front of this guy's house, honking at him, and so the guy smartly pulls out his phone.
And starts recording.
And this guy's driving his work van, and he leans out and is like, I just want to let you know that you're a N-word. And the guy who was followed home, African-American, is like, excuse you? And he's like, I just want to tell you this because you're rude. Like, his thing was that this guy who was in the wrong felt slighted by this African-American guy who was driving and just minding his own fucking business. And he followed him 2 miles to his house and called him an N-word because the white guy perceived that he was rude. And it's like a 3-minute video, and the guy managed to capture all of it. And he was like, and you noted in the video, it's like, you know, you said you're driving your truck. It says you're a government contractor. You know, I'm going to send this out, right? And he's like, well, you're still a, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
it has his company name and phone number on the driver's door of his van.
And his state licensee number.
Yeah.
And then he's like, the article where I found about this is like everything. He has been like crushed under the heel of social media. And he's like, I just don't understand the hate.
Says the guy that drove 2 miles to racially intimidate somebody.
Yeah. Basically, it's a 3-minute argument where the guy who was getting followed, basically was just like, he was very calm, very, like, held his ground. And he posted the video to social media, and within hours, the internet came calling on Whitman how he'd spoken his mind from behind the wheel of his company van with the names and phone numbers of his business right there on the driver's side door. The retaliation was immediate. If Whitman felt entitled to follow, confront, and demean a stranger from the seat of his marked company van, thousands of strangers felt obliged to punish him for it. They shared his image online, overloaded his voicemail, and flooded consumer websites like Yelp with hundreds of negative reviews, complete with images of the Ku Klux Klan and Hitler. Your type is not wanted in this country any longer, nor are your heating or cooling services ever needed again, reads one. All this has had the intended effect. It was an awful mistake, and obviously I don't know how to explain it. It's ruined my life, and it's ruined my family's life, Whitman says. He says this in a voicemail left for me on Thursday, 2 days after he most definitely didn't apologize when confronted by a local television reporter. Now in this message, he sounds despondent. I'm out of business. I'm completely out. I'm done. I'll never work in Columbus again, he says. This has completely and thoroughly ruined my life, the message ends abruptly. Stating the obvious there, driving to a stranger's house to harass the person with racial slurs is not a, quote, mistake. It is a chosen course of action. It is stupid and small-minded and threatening, and a host of other descriptions now attached to Whitman's name for internet eternity. On Friday, Whitman called again. He said he chose the wrong word and insists he's not a bigot. He provided a woman's number and urged me to call her. He wouldn't say why exactly, but I get the sense that he sees her as a character witness. He rambled a bit and said a few other things, including one sentiment that would have many of his newfound enemies guffawing. I just don't understand the intensity of the hate. He said that even his 86-year-old mother and his 25-year-old daughter, who uses a wheelchair, have become targets of the harassment campaign against him. I was just trying to address the rudeness, he said by way of explanation. The way he said this suggests he saw his Tuesday's encounter on Morse Road as the straw that broke the back. The line abruptly disconnected. I called the woman he asked and left a message. She didn't call back.
Now, I don't agree with him harassing his mother and his daughter.
No.
No, definitely not.
Dumbass, like...
But the fact that he's still not sounding apologetic at all. He's not
actually contrite.
He's seeing this as something that has been done to him by the internet. And it's like, you know, actions have consequences. And, I mean, that kind of behavior is just not fucking acceptable. You know?
You may feel emboldened to like, do it if you did that to
anybody. It's not cool. It's even worse because of the racist component.
Yeah.
And I chose the wrong word. I'm not a bigot. You don't follow a person of color and use a racial slur if you're not a bigot.
Yeah. You don't
call him an asshole. Call him an idiot. That's just too...
But
people duking it out. When you start breaking out that, I mean, no, you're a bigot.
That's like...
If that's the first insult out of your mouth.
Yeah.
There was another thing that happened recently where, like, a black woman took a parking spot from a white woman and the white woman decided to call the cops. You know, it's like, it's dumb shit like that. White people call the cops like they're talking to customer service.
Yeah.
I late at night, I tend to watch dumb shit on YouTube. You know, I watch everything from cooking shows to I watch fail videos. And last night, for whatever reason, the dive down that path, because sometimes they'll go fail video. Oh, here's the opposite of fail video. People doing neat shit. Everything from, you know, jumping rope, jumping cliffs, riding a bike. So it's
not fucking up.
but for whatever reason, something that came down and just autoplayed and I kept watching it was like road rage videos. And I swear I saw the good result of it where, again, straight, and it's a straight and a turn lane one.
Mm-hmm.
Chase down this black dude. And they're both probably in their late 50s. Older black dude, older white dude. White dude in like a big ass white pickup truck. Chases down. You really can't see much of the black dude. You see a little bit of his face and then he goes back to pointing at the truck. Doesn't use the N-word. Still chases him down. But one thing that goes on is like, they start duking it out of, no, you're wrong, all this other stuff. And then the black dude points out, you've been chasing me for 2 miles in a big truck, and you've got a gun sitting beside you on the seat. Well, so you've got that big-ass armrest between two truck seats.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got, like, looks like a bandana or some piece of cloth laid down, and there's a gun sitting on there. Why he felt the urge to have a pistol sitting right there? Guy maintains he always did it. And you can see the moment the dude in the truck realizes that it's not just about me yelling at you. It's the fact that I'm yelling at you and I've got a fucking gun right here. He's worried I'm about to kill him with it. And he sees where things have gone too far, too fast. And he never intended to use it, but it looks really fucking bad. And he watches the switch flip and the white dude's face go, oh, I see what you, I'm sorry, you know, I just, you know, I took it too far, and he backed off and gave a very contrite apology. But you watch him flip where he goes, I'm an angry white dude. I've got a gun. That's a black dude. I've just been chasing him for 2 miles to yell at him. This looks much worse than I ever intended it to be. And just watch you go, okay, yeah, my dude, you know, my bad dude, you know, and he just backs off, gets real contrite. And you could tell where he read the situation and how it looks from the other side. Went, oh, my bad. I'm sorry. Have a good day. But it's not like backpedaling. It didn't make him sound like he was like realized how, like he was doing it because he was afraid of getting in trouble. You saw him realize how it looked and how scary this would look from the other side of things. And he just backed way the fuck down with, oh, yeah, I'm sorry. My bad. You know, have a good day. He just reevaluated the entire situation and backed the fuck up. It was nice to actually see that, the better resolution of all this. Because when you did this, I'm like, wait, I just watched this last night. It didn't go down this way. And I realized it's another same incident, you know. It's like, oh, okay.
All right, well, we are coming up. It's 10:30, guys.
Yes.
We should probably wrap it up now. Thanks for listening. As always, you guys can send us emails, comments, friendly notes.
You can fix your Patreon.
Yeah, if you were a patron and you got declined and got removed as a patron, please, come back. We would appreciate it. Patreon.com/SouthPawsCast. You can send us emails at SouthPawsCast@gmail.com. You can send us comments via our Tumblr, SouthPawsCast.tumblr.com. You can also contact us on Ye Olde Internet. I've been including the show Telegram group link in the show notes last little bit. We've had a few people join that have stuck around and not been dipshits, so that's been nice.
Mm-hmm.
It helps that we have the pinned message of the rules.
Yeah.
We're like, if you're an asshole, we'll kick you out. You can find me on Twitter at Savrin Drake. You can find me on Twitch at Savrin.
You can find the show on Twitter at SouthPawsCast if you want to follow us there. We don't post a lot there, but I've started retweeting things occasionally.
Yeah, we retweet stuff from ourselves.
You can find my personal Twitter account is FuzzWolf, and my business accounts are FurPlanet and Bad Dog Books. And you can also go to fuzzwolf.com, and there's links to like all my stores and stories and all the stuff I'm up to, basically.
You'll find me either on Telegram or on Twitter as Chimera, K-H-Y-M-A-E-R-A. Because as always, Shiva is taken everywhere, and I don't really have much choice but to come up with something else. So I do. And that's the main place you'll find me.
So cons, I'm going to Worldcon here in 2 weeks, I think. And then the weekend after that's Denver. I won't be there, but Tieran will be, and for Planet we'll have tables there too. And then the week after that is Method Fermi, and that's over Labor Day weekend. So I've got tables at that also. I'll be there. Are you guys doing any cons anytime soon?
I got nothing planned for the rest of this year.
Yeah, I may find a local random gaming convention, like this weekend's Classic Gaming Expo down in Austin. Zap's down there and having a grand old time.
Cool.
But obviously that's in Austin. For me, I don't need to go to a convention. I need to fucking go out to Six Flags. I have not been to it during the main season except for once this year.
You have your season pass, right?
Yeah, and I went twice before the end of last season. So I've already gotten my money's worth out of it for sure.
Yeah.
But I want to go some more before, like, it goes back to weekends only. But it's been so fucking hot lately, I haven't had a chance. But I really want to go get some fucking brisket fries and ride all the roller coasters again. Like, that's one of those big things for me, is like, I get to keep going and ride the roller coasters. They just added another new ride that I haven't tried yet. So I got to get out there, hopefully, before the fall festivals and Fright Fest rolls around. But yeah, don't have any cons for next of the year unless I end up going and helping at one of the conventions you've got lined up, Fuzz. So we will see. All right, so on that note, good night.
And big books.